out in the dark with the radio spark. Put me where the most light falls. You are listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. Hello, and welcome to Where the Most Light Falls, an audio literary journal. I'm Tamara Miles, your host for the next hour. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you'll find me on Facebook at tamaramiles.poet and on Twitter at tamaramilessc. Or you can send me an email, tamaramilessc@gmail.com. Today, as a background to our readings, we'll be listening to Piano Works by Jan Tiersen from the movie Goodbye Lenin. We are all instruments of one kind or another, tools for delicate work, and this episode of Where the Most Light Falls features our instrumentations, our efforts to arrange our circumstances and to understand our role in the big picture of this life. At times we want to be seen, and at other times we want to disappear, and we use different means of doing so. For example, we might use our old friend alcohol. We might pick up a bottle and reconstruct our universe. Sometimes I draw so deeply into myself in a crowd of people that I feel as if I'm a ghost. Not really here, no one can see me. I have come back to haunt this place. I literally feel a bubble constructing itself around me. I hear the people outside the bubble. I hear some music playing on the piano. It has nothing to do with me. It is removed. I have entered a kind of magical forest. Of course, this is partly due to gin and tonic. I love the numb of the senses, the dimming of it all. But I always come back to real life, or at least to the paper and the pencil, and to my own garden of words. A new friend, Dr. Mary Moore, recently sent me some of her published and unpublished poems. And I'd like to share one of those with you to get things started this afternoon. It's called God of the Hoe. This is one of the unpublished poems. Dr. Moore is a professor emeritus at Marshall University. I'm grateful that she sent me this work. I'll tell you more about her in a minute. God of the Hoe. Lucky me, blade for a head, slanted just right to bite the earth, hoe with muscular oak handle. Don't worry, Johns can't use me. I'm unholy, sexless, and so flat no man fits me. In the fallow season, I lean on the barn wall among daffodil and iris blades, shape cousins whose bed I've shaped and loosened for the white roots, the eye bud's tendril. I'm unreflective, though, mud-dulled, dirt-milled. Not even the many-sided eyes the fly looks through as he fiddles on my blade can see in me. He's drawn by the blind baby possum the man sliced me through, lifting, then driving downward, forward, an ellipse the light didn't follow. So fast I fell. Poor bloodied thing. I'm soil, not soul sword. Pathmaker for eel, roots wily after water, and earthworms, flexible red pencils, soft-mouthed editors of leaf mulch and mold, though I don't spurn the oils and salts the manhandler steeps my handle in. I'm imbued with the human. I'm leaner and savvier, tool of a savvy god, destroyer and savior, Shiva. The second poem by Dr. Moore is called On My Mother's Suicide. And this was originally published in the Georgia Review in the winter of 2016. Hate of talk and sulk, saint of don't and won't, you never quite forgot, never forfeited worry, the gnaw you owned. You died of null and none, hip bone broken, woman bowl broken, you honed appetite to none, burrowed into nowhere's nothing bed. Now you walk at night, naught in a white gown, dark hair a burl of worry, pale hands ringing, fingers ringed for vowel and vowel, O for zero, O for no. I hold your ashes, silk and grit, shadow of wish and flesh, and still I jilt you, who taught me not too well. And will I, kneel I follow you, not hunger without a home? Goner, you got me in the end. Your sea-teal eyes, your worried ice, the swollen knuckle bones. I wear your musk, your never quite, your mull and nix. Mary Moore has won 4 poetry awards and had 3 books published in the last 2 years. Amanda and the Man Soul won the 2017 Emory's Prize, judged by Dorianne Lowe. Moore's second full-length collection, Flicker, 2016, Broadkill River Press, won the Dogfish Head Poetry Award, judged by Carol Frost, Baron Wormser, and Jan Beatty. Eating the Light, 2016, Sable Books, was chosen by Allison Joseph for that press's contest. Her poems appear in Georgia Review, Nimrod, the Orison 2017 Anthology, Nasty Women Anthology, Birmingham Poetry Review, Cider Press Review, Coal Hill Review, Drunken Boat, and others. Poetry, Field, Prairie Schooner, and New Letters have also published her. And Cleveland State UP published her full-length book, The Book of Snow, in 1998. Another Facebook friend named Gary Studley sent me a haunting poem that you may relate to if you have ever had any kind of addiction. It's called Visitation. Chop away before the light gives, ensure it's inside, in reach, against the wall, flanking the door jamb, cords and cords to back you up. Be prepared to burn every stick of furniture, then draw the curtains too. In case the fridge yields blank, sweep the backs of shelves, use a ladle if needed to extend your reach. Chip whatever's long forgotten out of freezer. Dates don't matter, anything counts. Usually there's a bottle somewhere. In the dresser, under the sink, bottom of the wardrobe. Either that or massed dregs in the out bin. Find it, keep it, have it slow. Use it to stave off, but for your sake, hold back a ration. Check the locks, check again. Again, wait. In the morning when the sun shapes the keyhole, listen twice. If there's silence, take the furthest window that still grants a view and slowly peel the curtain's corner like you were steaming off a stamp. Look carefully. If there's nothing, remove the bar, unlock, open up and step out slowly. Fingertips search the grounds. When you find the tracks, go back in, scrape ashes into whatever won't melt, and once outside, spoon them into the last footprint. Then piss on them, stir it into a paste. Later, once it's dried, pour on the last of the whiskey and set it alight. Watch until the flames die out. Put a knuckle to them to be sure. Be sure. If you don't, they will come back. Gary Studley is a tutor, artist, writer, and performer. Previously a member of both Canterbury's Laureate Squad and its Roman Museum's Poet in Residence, he has been lucky enough to win UKC's T.S. Eliot Prize and come second, third, and best read in Canterbury Festival's Poet of the Year competition. He leads Soundlined Poets with Jeffrey Laufman and recently designed and published an eponymous anthology plus his solo poetry collection, There Is Another Way. In addition, in the past 10 years, he has also been a cover illustrator for poetry and prose books, including Stubborn Mule Orchestra, Between the Lines, When Words Rub Together, and The Bigger Picture, Reflections on the Great War. For fun, he has 3 monthly poetry and prose events in Kent, at Beach Creative CIC, Herne Bay, at the Jolly Sailor, Canterbury, and at the Lighthouse, Deal, with Jeffrey Laufman. We are visited by our ghost and our longings. The man in the moon visits us too with his promises. My beautiful friend, Kim Smith, recently wrote a brief reflection on one of those moonlit nights or early mornings. It's called The Moon is Crazy Bright. The moon is crazy bright, making deep shadows for early morning. Shadows lit with silver that hide nothing. I pull the blanket tighter around my shoulders, freezing cold, yet unable to move from this spot while the moon lives in my realm, lights my dreams, steals my best intentions. Time stands still in the moonlight, and anything is possible. Everything I want shimmering there under its opalescent glow. In a separate poem, Kim describes her sense of knowing what she wants. Restless. Restless. Energy running under my skin, sharpening my edges, yet blurring my desire, my ability to choose, to accomplish, to see one thing. My world is splayed out in front of me, bound to compass points on cold sacrificial stone, and I will have it, all of it. Kim Smith is a writer of many influences who is currently working on her first novel, as well as a journal chronicling the ins and outs of being a later blooming author. She spends her days writing down anything that pops into her head, poetry, snarky social media posts, drinking copious amounts of coffee and reading voraciously. She and her husband live in the suburbs of Chattanooga, Tennessee. I have another wonderful friend named Yvonne Brewer. Yvonne is a native of County Offaly, Ireland. She is mother to Rowan and Adam and lives with them and her husband Gerard Spillane in beautiful East Cork. Yvonne studied at University College Cork in the 1990s and has a degree in social science and a master's in social science and youth and community work. She also has a diploma in reflexology and is a Reiki master since 2001. Having enjoyed several jobs, including as a lecturer and community development worker, her most rewarding career to date has been as a full-time mother to her two sons. Her interests are all things mothering, meditation, practicing Reiki, and recently she's enjoying a new path of creative writing. Yvonne wrote an ebook of pregnancy meditations called Breathe and Bloom, Soul Mother Meditations, that is available on Amazon. She is currently working on her own collection of poetry and has a new Facebook page called Wise Words. It's the letter Y, apostrophe S, words. Contact Yvonne on her Facebook page or by email at brewer_y@yahoo.ie or on Twitter at bloomyvo. And I want to share with you something she wrote called, it's called Swan Drops. Whoever named snowdrops obviously had never seen a swan. I remember thinking this as a child, but I told no one. Their silent white heads stared at me as I struggled, wing-like, in February's first day of wind, as I fought to put clothes pegs on blowing white sheets on the clothesline. Swan Drop nodded. Swan Drop smiled, knowing she hangs her whites more graceful than mine. Now, I'd like to tell you about a journal with an unusual name. It's called Rigwelter. Rigwelter is a verb. It's a dialect word from the north of England, meaning a sheep having fallen onto its back, being unable to right itself. That sheep is said to be rigweltered, as in the bloody thing's rigweltered again. Rigwelter is a journal of creative arts founded by Amy Kinsman in 2017. It releases an issue once a month. They are open to submissions of poetry, short fiction, visual art, and experimental media. Amy says to tell you that for clarity's sake, she and the journal are not associated with Black Sheep Brewery or the lovely ale that they produce that shares the name Rigwelter. Amy Kinsman is the managing editor. She is a gender-fluid poet and playwright from Manchester, England, who prefers the pronouns they and them. As well as managing Rigwelter, Amy is associate editor with Three Drops from a Cauldron and runs Guerrilla Poetry Open Mic in Sheffield. They have also been a student editor of Route 57, and their work has previously appeared in many print anthologies and web journals. Their debut pamphlet is forthcoming from Indigo Dreams later in 2018. I was lucky enough to have two poems in the recent edition of Rigwelter. one called Sower with Setting Sun, and one called I Free Everyone. And I'll share those with you now. Sower with Setting Sun, it phrases to Van Gogh. With the last few silent seeds sown in late sun, the sower, brow beaded in sweat, heeds dusk, prays that where the dark seeds grow, they grow free from greedy weeds, and he grows free from whispered worries yet, and deeds that need doing. At quickened speed, he daydreams of a woman who knows his days are thorny, and thinks to meet thorns means one may someday greet the roses. But roses do not grow in these rows. No, he knows this. They grow in finely sown rows, he supposes, where roses grown by fancy gardeners grow, and he no fancy gardener, but a sower of dark seeds. Dark, burgeoning seeds that feed the ones who read, by lamplight, stories of secret gardens. Into those gardens she leads, the scented woman he knows, and even he who can't read, reads well enough the woman and her needs. He vows to read her more closely than she dreams a man with dirt-stained hands can, and bring roses in those hands from the garden he has planned. It is no secret garden. It grows the way his heart grows, unthwarted, in broken ground, hardy, not temperamental, waiting only on the sun to come, untroubled by weeds. I Free Everyone. I free everyone. I free you from loving out of necessity. I free you from coming home when you would rather be somewhere else. I free you from obligatory dinners, concerts, insisted taste of my pistachio ice cream. I free you from yesterday as well as tomorrow. I free you from friendship, kinship, authorship, from the hovering spaceship of my presence, from small talk, too much talk, too little space, too many ironing boards and dollops of mustard on stale bread, appointments. I free you from memory, even. No, especially. I free you from tasteless jokes, repeated stories, promises and impositions, from paying bills for items you never wanted, from rings and mashed potatoes on Tuesday. I free you from wet towels on the floor, from my ego, God help us, my pride, light switches left on, from dim regrets for what was left undone. I free you for forever, for honest passion, for baggy pants and unwashed shirts, for impromptu travel, for flashes of lightning in dangerous situations you walk right into because nobody, absolutely nobody, can live with somebody else's steel-toed boot pressing down on a foot that wants a sandal, wants a beach, wants electric nights on hot streets, wants to be left alone, wants to die in peace. I free you. I'd like to tell you about another friend named Martha Maria. She's also known as Dogwood Daughter, and you can look her up and read more about her at the Dogwood Daughter website. While you're there, you should check out her blog. I'm going over there now so I can read something to you from her blog. It's called Spirit Quest Blog. And I'm reading from one entry called Opening Some Windows, which she posted on January 23rd of this year. Sometimes I drive around Oak Ridge, studying the old Semesto houses, looking for original windows. There aren't many left. I still love the original casement windows with their thin, wavy glass panes opening out like sails on a ship. I remember the delicious currents of air that used to blow through the house when I was a little girl, lifting filmy white organdy curtains that danced in the breeze, weightless as ghosts. I remember the sounds that wafted through the open windows of our neighborhood. The whoosh of passing cars, the sputter of lawnmower engines, the buzz of insects and whistling bird song, the clatter and bang of myriad indoor and outdoor chores, and the high-pitched ring of children's voices. And I still miss the way those open windows admitted the ordinary and intimate odors of life. Cut grass, honeysuckle, car exhaust, frying bacon, burning leaves, fertilizer, and rain evaporating on asphalt. There was a time when windows did, in fact, open to let the wind in, but that was a long time ago, before air conditioning and heat pumps. Now, I seldom see an open window, not in a house, a school, or even a passing car. Most of us live behind our closed doors and windows, sealed off from one another and our environments. Could the price of our temperature-controlled comfort be a sense of isolation, a disconnection from each other and the rest of the world? I wonder if the first step in dissipating an epidemic of social isolation might be as simple as opening some windows and letting a little fresh air in. I have another friend named Claire Glenchatten. I've read her work before on the show. She's got a poem called Penny Bun that I wanted to share with you today. Do you remember Penny Bun? She passed our gate twice daily. She traveled to and from our town, foraging to live sedately. She would tote her bundle, homeward bound, her treasures always found. Sticks or wooden boxes to fuel her fire and keep her safe and sound. Old coat and hat wrapped round her frame, so small and dainty in wind and rain. In winter, spring, and fall, she moved quiet, faintly, slippers or boots stuffed with paper. Laces were of twine so old. Was her heart once broken? Is that the story when it's told? Who knew what thoughts were lodged within her brain? What memories of youth, her loves and family still remained? Within her world, what sorrow had she gained? Did poverty play a part, leave her no support? Where did she reign? How cruel is youth to taunt the old and weak? There goes Penny Bun, a soft voice calls as they played hide and seek. She was well known by that name, and only a name, I'll give her that. The name that journeyed with her on her walk to town and back. Claire has a wonderful book out called The Immigrants. And if you'd like to read more about her stories and her poetry, you can visit her at chitanclare.wixsite.com/mysite. She is Glenn Sinclair, Sinclare. And her note says, "Welcome to my world. Writing poetry and prose has immersed me in occupation. I have no time to grow old. I am too busy now that the floodgates have opened. I have dipped my toe in the waters of creativity. I can see creativity all around. My heart soars. I have found an outlet for my creative being. I asked myself, could I be a poet, a writer? My writing has made me walk tall, be proud to own my work and call it work. That which fills my every thought, absorbs my fiber in my being." Visit Claire on Facebook or go to her website and read her poems. Tell her I sent you. Another new friend who sent me some of his poetry via email is Matt Chamberlain. And I'd like to share with you his poem called Wolf. Wolf, fear is the dread. Wolf, stalking with black stoop to conquer sleep. Echo, echo, echo. Belly slunk blue and snuck through. His gut drags the blackened blizzard remains. With owls he shouts smoke signals in darkness. Fear is the dread, wolf, choking on the rounded smell of soil and mist, opportunities butchered. Fangs so close, bauble window gleams your eye with howls of distemper, wind and half light. Fear is the dread, wolf in sheep's winter coat. Elongated, barren white atomic bombs can't reach to stain. Forget to breathe the air is colic, albino spiders, terror tunnel. Too much space dazzles blind and timorous. Echo, echo, echo. As long as there's a sun, I'll curl with rabid beast and driving snow. Warm in their sleek pulses, quarry for their danger den, blanketed in peril. Rather this than menace by echoes, because blunt wind knows, as I know, that fear is the real dread, wolf. Matt is a UK-based performing and published poet. He has published in The Echo Chamber, a collaboration with Angela Dye, a collection from 2018. Pin Me to the Goldfish, a collection from 2017. One Man's Trash, a collaboration with Spreakin, collection 2017. As well as the following: Lowering Awareness, Binge Thinking, Love, Misery, and Fruit Crumble. He has also been a contributor to An Assemblance of Judicious Heretics, and he has been published in various magazines and journals, including Confluence Magazine, Wandering Words, Magnolia Review, Thanet Poetry Journal, Message to a Stranger Zine. And he has performed at Vickers Picnic Festival, Yalding, Kent, An Assemblage of Judicious Heretics Launch, Dickens Festival in Rochester, the Nepal Earthquake Benefit Gig, Maidstone, Kent, and at the Kent Festival of Music, Speech, and Drama, and many other performances. He's been a guest on Poets and Poetry Radio Show and other shows, and I'm pleased to have him on Where the Most Light Falls. If you'd like to get in touch with Matt, he's at mattchamberlainpoetry@gmail.com and at mattchamberlainpoe.wix.com/poetry and on Facebook. Let me read you a poem of mine called Man Pleads Guilty to Trying to Smuggle Tiger Cub. I often am drawn to write a poem based on a news article that I see, and this is one of those. This is an actual title. Man Pleads Guilty to Trying to Smuggle Tiger Cub. I wanted his teeth, his young finesse, his staggering beastly beauty to be mine. I wanted a little portion of God. I craved his restless sway, his tumble and roll freedom movement. I admired him. I thought above all else he should be mine as recompense for all I've been denied in this body. Next to his, a shadow. I can but walk to work or go in cars to places ordinary. He can climb higher. I wanted his grace, the way his tail diverts onlookers from the firm grasp of his jaw, and the blood to follow, gritty with satisfaction. Here's another a recent poem of mine. It's called The First Protest Movement. And this was written when I read that teething was listed as a cause of death quite frequently in the 1800s. The First Protest Movement. Those teeth, breaking milky through resistant gums, my darling, will not kill you, though the ache seems ominous, warns of volcanic eruption. Daffodont, born for this resistance and a thousand others, taut as a nerve, as well as for incisors, canines, bicuspids, and molars, enameled, stubborn at the root, supernumerary, you are on the cusp. Nature has declared it good that you should bite and tear, gnaw and grit, clench and grind, as well as whistle through the loose one or two among the white and shiny mantle of your mouth, cradled in the jawbone, your wisdom worn, your anatomic crown of protest. Here's a poem called One Man Parade. This is from my collection of bird poems. Parrot, a dream of splendid color, wings awash rainbow vivid in your tree hollow, bill curved below intelligent eyes, expansive binocular design, a view for which you need not turn your head. The child's voice in us, playful imitator, sounds held in the syrinx minus vocal cords, breathy tracheal movement, a memory of what we've said. Charismatic bird, 70s spaced out hippie flower child, to walk you rock and roll. Dexterous, you climb and swing, gather food with your feet, grip and hook as you please, have a preference for left or right. Hard to catch, in flight with ease, chewing off bands meant to track you, we cannot know exactly where you go, what tree canopies offer themselves temporary shelter, what seed, what fruit or bud you swallow away from home, what secret audiobooks you've read, free and mischievous, crushing the husk in your mighty mandible, you flip the seed and feast. In love, a one-man parade, your eyes ablaze, then stay with the one you've wed, not territorial except when nesting. Coupled, you excavate a nest where termites have moved out. Mother incubates the young, born featherless or downy, puzzle solver, social learner, homeschooled in play, a thousand-word vocabulary, good grammar, a thing you flout. To clarify your needs or get your way, you are known to bite and scream, a vision of toys and tricks in your 100-year Technicolor dream. And now, a poem called Transpiration. A love poem. A late Valentine. Transpiration. The movement of water through a plant, root to pore to vapor rising from a leaf. This is the way your voice comes to me right before you burrow underneath. First at the root where I wait and listen, then in at the pores of my skin, which bears soul witness in chill bumps and calls for the heat upon the sheath, then spreads to an envisioned groan that quiets other frantic noise of love to muted bell-toned joys in temple towers 4 o'clocks beneath. My heart, a microscope, observes that final cultured gasp, that cry, before you slide away to breathe. My pleasure in your pleasure satisfied. My body once more, moor and heath. and we settle in with smiles at how this cultivated love transpires, an exhaled breath that co-conspires above our garden, fruited bower, and stirs the sleeping gods to power. I will be bloom for your next taking, scissored out in Queen Anne's lace, a dewy herb and flower, and abort all my other hotbed lush experiments for this private sound booth seated hour. Do you ever read Rattle Journal? Rattle's the one everybody wants to get published in, isn't it? Its mission is to promote the practice of poetry. I'd like to read from that mission statement at rattle.com. We feel that poetry lost its way in the 20th century, to the point that mainstream readers have forgotten how moving language alone can be. As a result, most people learn to find their feelings in music, movies, and novels, while poetry languishes on its lone shelf in the bookstores, waiting only for the occasional cameo at a university workshop. But it shouldn't take a scholar to be moved by the written word. Great literature has something to offer everyone. All our lives are compelling, full of joys and burdens and profound experiences we should be sharing. And poetry is the most intimate way to share it. When you read a poem, you become the medium. The poet speaks in your voice, paints the canvas of your inner eye. This connection is more direct than any other, and it doesn't take a Hollywood budget to do it. You can read the poems on Rattle.com for free. Write a poem on a napkin and share it with a friend. Keep a journal and send us a page. Participate. The pure love of language is one of the most important experiences in the history of human culture, and somehow most of us have forgotten about it. I encourage you to submit something to Rattle or to some other poetry venue, magazine, or send something to me so that I can share it on Where the Most Light Falls. Let me tell you about Janet Kozacek. Janet is an artist, a painter, mosaic artist. She's also a poet. You can read more about Janet at her website, kozacekart.blogspot.com, and you spell her name kozacekart.blogspot.com. And she has sent me a couple of wonderful poems that I'd like to share with you. One of them is called The String of Pearls. It's from a collection of hers called Moments in Light and Shadows. Between the prehensile thumb and the ductile fingers, pearls roll back and forth, keeping time to her silent question, what was the meaning of it all? The question presses her brow into a narrow gorge from which answers do not flow like rivers. She tugs at the necklace, turning it forward, then backward. She pulls it outward, inviting solace to fall into the gulf between her neck and the string of pearls. How could he have done it? This way, then that way. The smooth, cool, white little balls gleam around the irritant from which they were made. That tiny seed of discontent that time and layering turn into art. What had I done? Shifting and twisting upon itself, the dewy spheres meet her searching fingertips. She folds the string of pearls into the sign for infinity. The necklace slips slowly from her grasp. She lets it drop, asking, why me? And there's a second one called Blues Players Don't Wear Shoes. Tennis players wear no shoes. They slide sandals on their feet, their toes free to jam on notes, ringing like little bells strung along the strands of sounds. Blues players don't need glasses. They stare through shining glass eyeballs, rubbed and polished portholes to the center of the soul. Blues players have no gloves. Their hands hang loose to pluck notes from strings or ripple over sound holes like the wind across a hollow tree. Blues players laugh at clothes. They darn their own from needles that click and clack like drumsticks on a skin. Blues players don't watch time. They cool freeze over seconds, minutes, hours, never knowing night from day. Blues players live life sweet, their noses sniffing the perfume of music in the breeze, blowing loud, hard, soft, and neat. Dues payers, soothsayers, truth wearers, blues players wear no shoes. Janet is an eclectic artist with a diverse background. She had an art education that took place on three different continents. The multitude of influences can make it challenging for those who would like to define her as an artist, but it does make for interesting stories. She studied art and science at Douglas College in New Jersey and obtained her Master of Fine Arts degree in painting from Parsons School of Design. In between New Jersey and New York, she took a 7-year detour into China and Europe. She learned how to become a Chinese painter at the Beijing Central Art Academy and how to be a ceramic sculptor at the State Academy of Applied Arts in Maastricht, Holland. She has made her home and studio in Orangeburg, South Carolina for about 14 years. Now I'm going to tell you about a mysterious fellow that I met on Twitter. His name is Neil G. I don't know his last name. But he has sent me a recording of himself reading one of his poems called Shadows. And I think it's wonderful. So he has said you can look him up on Twitter at Banquo's Ghost. This is spelled BanquozGhost. Banquo's Ghost on Twitter. Here's Neil G. reading his poem, Shadows.
What happens now that I am nothing? Living in a box, measuring meager clothing against the elements, savoring any sip of coffee, hot. Checking warily, one way, then the other, for intrusive shapes. Do I have a shadow? Or am I one, cast by something that's forgotten me?
I'm sure that we will hear from Neil G. again. Have you ever felt forgotten? You know, one good way to live forever is to write something down that other people can read long after you are gone. Maybe it's time that you wrote some poetry or some stories. I'm going to share a few more with you before we get out of here today. First, here's one from Rattle. This is by Chris Rancic. It's called Here, She Said. It's not what the light lets you see, she said. It's this. And she pulled my face underwater with a kiss. Like amateurs, we covered ourselves with earth, came up the hill phosphorescent as if we'd hibernated, forgotten our names. At the top again, we remembered them and forgot only her shoes. Hallelujah, may they glow there forever above the pressed turf. The illuminated trace of pleasure turned to halo round an embarrassed moon. Between birth and death, we may have a host of hallelujahs from the mountaintops. This is a poem called Thatched Houses at Cordville. It's an ekphrasis poem to the Van Gogh painting by that name. Storybook roof, 20 years thatched in whistled snatches of a worker's time. Belt slung, tool-tongued, he climbs upon the ladder rungs. His hammer beats the bundled straw by nail to paper laths pitched high and steep, to tame the rainfall's rolling, lulling rhyme, when underneath a mother reads, having sung her tot to sleep. This next one is from a collection of mine called Fabric, and this is a rather unusual set of poems featuring a character named Cotton. Cotton comes to life and has a voice and visits a lot of people in history. But this is the first one. It's called Part One, Cotton Talks, The Fabric of Our Lives. Years ago, in the car with my mother, I remarked on how pretty the cotton fields were. You wouldn't think they were so pretty, she said, if you ever had to pick it. I remembered Sally Field's bloody, scratched hands wrapped in bandages in that movie in which a woman's husband died and left her to bring in the harvest alone except for a couple of loyal field hands and a blind man and a child. Cotton in the Kleenex. Cotton in the washcloths I clean myself with. Cotton in the towels I use to dry. Cotton balls for taking off eye makeup. Cotton candy in rainbow colors at the fair to get us good and sticky. There's even a snake they call a cotton mouth. In the 16th century, to cotton well meant that the fibers melded together successfully. In the 1700s, people used the expression to mean a person had prospered. In the American South of the 1800s, we started saying, I don't cotton to that, meaning I don't care for that. At some point, the cotton itself started to speak. It held its first conversation with the devil. Sir, it said, you're a scoundrel. I blame you for the backs that ached and bled, for the whips that cracked, for the children torn from their mothers, and for the shame of human beings sold on auction blocks. The devil only shook his head. Cotton, he laughed, blame yourself. Blame the greed of slave owners who thought they were righteous. It don't take no devil to me to bring a mind down low with meanness. Anyhow, Cotton, you're scratchy, and you only grow in the blazing heat. Ain't nothing I can do about that. Take that up with the one who made you. Cotton had to think that over for a spell. I have found myself with a little extra time at the end of the show today, so I'm going to return to the poems of Mary Moore, Dr. Moore, and read her poem, Venice Beach, 1950. I just make out the buoy and the boy who reaches it, a blonde spot at the red uncapsizable hat gone past the continent's ledge. He waves, the sea waves too, advances on a crab's sandhole hermitage. Inside, it's rimmed with falling sand grains like stars. The sea foam winks closer. I eye the crab's house. Will he escape? Pinchers bobbing, open like mouths. I pose the question while my father, back to the sea, snaps photos. I am the sea's corsage, a pink and brown girl, pinned by unstinting sunlight to a towel, to the sand. Sunburned, hot, I stand. If you look through me, you see my brother's head bobbing on the sea's wink and blink. He emerges, buoyant, beaded, starred. I am envy's crabbed sister. My horizon, sand's old glitter. That's from Cider Press Review, Best of 2016. That piece reminds me of a flash fiction story that I've been working on, based on the Beaumont children. It's called Glen of Beach. I wasn't sure if it was finished, but I think I'm going to go ahead and bring it out to finish up today's show. So if you don't know about the Beaumont children, they were kidnapped in the 1950s. It's a very sad story. All three of the children were at the beach when it happened. And this is my take on it. We took the bus to Glen Oak Beach, the three of us, as we had done before. And the sand and sea greeted us as they always had, with murmurings and promises of pleasure. We were children then and did not know the ways it was possible to drown. In our costumes of swimsuits, sun hats, and towels under the arm, we took the seagull stage with sunbathers young and old. It was 1966, and our parents wanted us to know the freedom of summer. We played as the innocent do, free of fears or suspicions. And when a handsome blonde stranger stopped to smile at us, we had no cause for worry. His purchases of lemonade delighted my little brother and sister. And for me, his eyes held truths that adults knew. And I had just begun to dream of growing up. From the next day's newspaper, our curious faces looked out at the world in black and white. We were the Beaumont children, and we were missing. For 50 years now, people have been looking for us. But long ago, we lost our names and put away our sandy castles. The stranger who held us apart from everything we loved became our only family, the one on whom we depended to tell us who we were. All right, my friends, I've come to the end of the session. I hope you will send me some of your own poems and stories. I'm looking forward to receiving them and sharing them. See you soon. In the dark with the radio spark, meet me where the most light falls. You've been listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. The intro music for this show is from purpleplanet.com. It's called Prohibition Blues, and that's me singing the tune.